Hey everybody, this is Wade with Wade for Wireless, and today, I know we talk about the OSHA RFI that they put out to the climbers, to you, the people working in the field, to you, the people making the decisions, to you, the business owner running crews. They're coming to you for answers and information about what's being done in the field, about safety. So for all of you that say OSHA doesn't care, you now have a chance to show that you care about the industry by putting responses in. I was looking at Wireless Estimator site, which is what I use quite a bit. And on the Wireless Estimator site, you can see other people's responses. And I really enjoy it. And I'm going to put mine up there. I just haven't gotten to it yet. And the reason is I type all the questions out on Word, and then I work at it from there. It takes a long time to go through everything. So what I wanted to do is put the questions and my answers in a blog. And it's really to motivate you guys to correct me, tell me if I'm wrong, tell me if you agree, and also to go, the easiest way to do it is on a Wireless Estimator site. But the point is, just respond to the RFI. Take the time, respond to the RFI. You don't have to do it all at once. You can look at all the questions ahead of time. You can download the PDF. All the links are in there. Everything's in there. And I have the questions on my blog, and that's what I'm going to go through this week. So I think it's very important that we give OSHA all the information we can so they understand what's going on out in the field. This is their attempt to understand what's going on out in the field. You have the responsibility to let them know what's going on out in the field. Now, when you respond, be professional. You know what I mean? Try to be very fair. You can't just say, you got to do more. What good's that? What I'm trying to do is give some detail. And I know Greg says about giving backup and information, and that is what they need. They need information, but they also want opinions. So if you have an idea how to make things better, put it in there. And I did look at some of the responses. Now today, because it's so big, I only concentrated on the tower climber questions, right? And I'll probably put out a few more. I'll go over each section. There are several sections. But today, I just want to concentrate on the questions for tower climbers, which I think are 8 questions. Those are the first 8 questions. It's just too much to put in one post. So, Wireless Estimator has a link. And I'd also, before I forget, like to thank my sponsor, Tower Safety. We're the best get better, and it does all your safety training needs for tower climbing. It has OSHA 10. Tower Safety and Rescue, they have first aid, CPR training, and they're adding training every day. So thank you, Tower Safety, TSI, Tower Safety Incorporated, towersafety.com. So here's what I want to do. When I post mine, if you want to look for what I put out there, which I don't know when I'm going to do it. Today is April 22nd. It's a Wednesday. I'm going to try to get it up today, all my questions, but it takes time. I've been sort of busy lately. So I just want you to think about that when you search there. But the other thing I want you to think about is this is your chance to do a good thing for the industry, a good thing that OSHA is trying to help us out and understand what's going on out there. And you got to be honest with them, but don't be a jerk, okay? Be professional. You know, one of the things, let me tell you, one of the things that's hard to defend is when I say it's full of professionals, and then you look at some of those postings on some of these Facebook groups, that have to do with the tower climbers, and I'm trying to defend that you're professionals, right? It just gets very frustrating. So the other thing I found out is I've been talking to a lot of tower stackers, and they've been hiring a lot of guys from the cell site industry, meaning the antenna and lineman workers, and they're saying about how inexperienced a lot of these young guys are. Listen, if you think you're in over your head, you'd better do something about it. It's very important that you understand the job, and you understand what's going on out there. I know we're all busy, but we're never too busy to learn. If it's just a job to you, that's fine. Get in, get out, move on. If it's a step in your career path, then you want to educate yourself. And that's what I'm saying here. It's a profession. Just because you're a tower climber now doesn't mean you won't be a business owner later. You won't run crews. It doesn't mean you won't be a project manager. You won't be a safety instructor. There's a lot of avenues here. You know, it's a career path. You just have to open up your mind. There's estimators. So many people, there's specialties like closeout packages. That there's site survey people that just do surveys. There's going to be small cell work. There's a lot of work coming out there. So for all you guys that think this is the only thing you're ever going to do, maybe it is. And if you're happy doing that, God bless you. Stick with it. But if you want to do a career path and you want to make changes, you want to run your own crews, you want to train people for safety, you want to manage a project, you want to do any of that, you want to estimate costs, any of that, there's avenues out there, okay? And now that drones are coming up, I think that might be the next thing. A lot of these guys are going to learn how to manage drones for a lot of these, a lot of the work out there, so especially inspections and such. So with all that said, I'm going to go through the questions one at a time and then my answers. So question number one, as a tower climber, what are the most significant hazards that you encounter in the job? What circumstances or conditions create or contribute to these hazards? So here's what I did. I broke it down into three things. Hazards. For number one is hazards, my response. Hazards: falling, fatigue, injury from exertion, stress from travel and working at heights. The climber's job is at a height and outdoors, so weather is also a hazard. The climber must work in all climates, causing another risk to be taken into consideration. Frostbite and heat exhaustion are all factors that cause problems when working at height. Now, I know it's light. There's a lot of hazards. I thought that would be a good overview. Circumstances. Oftentimes, the circumstances that cause problems are when the schedule is pushing the climbers to work quickly and longer hours in the air. The deadlines need to be realistic and take into account that there are delays due to delivery and weather and other customers' schedules. What I mean by that, there's other customers. It seems like when they do the auctions, everyone builds at the same time, so it's feast or famine. This is often why inexperienced crews do much of the work, because the rollouts of all the carriers happen simultaneously. Look at the auctions. All of the carriers win the frequencies at the same time, so they all have to deploy along the same schedules. This causes the current contractors to book up very quickly. This falls into the realm of taking shortcuts. If the climbers would remain tied off 100% of the time, then you would think that the problem would be resolved. The schedule causes them to take shortcuts. Also, a big part is getting paid. Low pay makes for poor quality of worker, training, and lack of PPE. When crews don't get paid, either by their owners or contractors, for any reason, they can't continue safely. Now, my point there was, it's very important to bring pay into it. Because obviously, if you don't have the money, it's very hard to pay for training and PPE. And it's a trickle-down effect. You know, I mean, the way AT&T did it with the turfer program, they put so many contractors in between the guys doing the work and AT&T. And I get why they do it. They did it for security. They're a very insecure company. They don't want to get sued. They don't want to be in trouble. And they also don't want to deal with a problem. They probably don't want to hire the people to do the work, meaning they don't want to hire project managers to manage every little detail. They want to put that in the hands of people that know better. Unfortunately, as you know, years passed, the program didn't work out quite the way we thought it would. So now, my final section is conditions. Working at heights for prolonged periods in all environments in odd positions while moving heavy weight caused many problems. It causes the workers to overexert themselves if they don't have the right tools. The tight schedules given to the climbers due to heavy emphasis put on the due dates and trying to make the hours bid, but I mean by that hours bid on the job. Often the job is bid skinny, causing the hours to be unrealistic. If there is bad weather, it could cause issues with climbing, or if you delay the climb and the schedule will be impacted, causing the climbers to try to get done in less time by rushing, taking shortcuts, or working extremely long days, even in the dark. The stress is caused by extensive travel and the worry of training new workers at heights. It becomes tough to worry about yourself and your greenhorn. So when you have a schedule like this, you're probably also training people. That was my point with that. Chances are they get trained on the job. They should have training and be trained, but it's not the same as doing the work. Doing the work is almost, you have to have an apprenticeship program in place. A new guy goes with an experienced crew and so on. Unfortunately, in years past, it hasn't worked out that way. They just train, 10 new people, and then you have two crews of four, and then the other two guys do whatever. So you have basically two inexperienced crews out there. That's what makes it tough. I think that the point we have to get across here, or I'm trying to get across, this is all about me and my answer. You give your own answers. Everyone should have an independent answer. That's what the OSHA is looking for. They're looking for honesty, variety, and accuracy. So for me, I think I'm trying to stress the schedule. I'm trying to stress the danger. I'm trying to stress how the training program is tough on people and travel. So, all right, let's go to number two. What steps do you, number two is from OSHA. What steps do you take at this time to complete your work safely? What safety-related work practices do you think should be in place? Well, currently employed is the 100% tie-off, training and practice. That's what should be out there. That along with the logging the high time and drive time of each climber, that's what I think they should do. So there should be a 100% tie-off rule, required training for all workers on site for tower work, tower safety, and rescue. You think that'd be the standard, but I'm just stressing it here. First aid and CPR should also be standard. All drive and high time should be logged and kept on record. All practice and tower rescue should be logged and kept on record. All certifications should be required and kept on record. I think the customer should require all the records they can get along with a safety audit. I guess I'd better word that better. I'll probably clean that up a bit. But my point here was just trying to show them what they can do to improve things. Number three, what safety rules and work practices are provided to you and who provides you with the information? When I did tower work, you know, there was a safety handbook, and that had a list of the rules. We're supposed to have a safety person. Not all companies do. Usually it's the foreman or the manager, but in this case, I put in the safety handbook, there's a list of rules, 100% tie-off, notes about the drug tests, and the safety practices of the worker. There is also a safety manual from Comtrain that is passed around. There's also a list of safety practices from OSHA and the insurance company about heavy lifting. The handbook is usually distributed by the foreman or HR. And I guess I should also put in there that that's also who does the training. That's who provides us with the rules. So I just stuck to that for my answer. Number four, who assigns and oversees your work? Who provides your training and checks on your equipment when at a job site? To whom would you report a potential safety issue? And usually the way it works, when I did it, usually there's a department head, a project manager, a foreman that oversees the work from a high level. Then in the field in the tower site, that's where your foreman or a crew lead oversees the work on the maintenance. The schedule and the safety practice, someone from HR and the safety person oversees the training and the certificate. You would report all incidents to your immediate supervisor. And that's basically what I put down. At least that's how it was where I was. So, and that's probably the standard, the norm. You could probably also report it to a safety person. I'm just going to speak from my experience. So, did I miss anything there? I wonder if I did a job site. Who would you report a potential safety issue to? Well, I have incidents. You know what? Maybe I missed a question there. You know what? I'm probably going to revise that answer too, because they're asking about incidents. So I should probably put something in about incidents. Okay, so I'm going to also put potential safety issues would be reported to the foreman or the lead on site. And that's how we did it. You saw a safety issue, you reported it. Usually you talked it over with the crew and you reported it to the lead. So next. I know that took a while to get through. I had to think about them. So what specific steps do you think employers can take to make tower work safer? So I think the companies should do safety audits. I think safety audits work best. They have a person come out in the sites randomly to inspect the crew and offer ways to improve safety without being a jerk. Some safety guys are just jerks. They don't know safety and they try to overcompensate. I think that practice makes perfect by getting the crew or crews together once a month to practice rescue and safety and talk about how they do things is a big help. In other words, sharing of ideas. I believe that the annual training is very important to keep everyone up to speed. And when I say annual, I mean annual. I don't mean every 2 years. I think it's important to do it annually if you have the time. I know it's tough, but let's say 2 years should be the maximum. So here, I really think the practice is a big thing. Now, for all you guys out there, all you crews that say, oh, we can't do safety audits, we can't do this, we can't do that, that takes time and money. Listen, I know a lot of crews where the owner goes out to inspect the sites. That guy's doing a safety audit. He's making sure that things are being done right, and he contributes more than just safety. He's out there to point things out that people could do better on their job. It's safety, and it's a job thing. You can combine the jobs. Most people are out there to help the other people. Now, when you try to help people, some people get defensive. I don't know why, they just do. What you're trying to do is help them be safer and you're helping them work smarter. And you're gonna also understand that they're out there to work. They're not out there to screw off or soak up the sun. They're out there to get a job done. I know I jump on both sides here, guys, but that's the reality of it. What you're out there to do is do your job. Now, it's a shame when people do their job and then they don't get paid. So there is a balance. So you got to do your job. If someone comes out and makes a recommendation to you, for instance, you're not tied off. We have 100% tie off rule. If you're not tied off, you can't yell back and say, I can't tie off because, you know, you got a tower in front of you. And if you're climbing up a monopole, monopoles are dangerous, but hopefully you have a safety climb. You got to come up with a really good excuse. And if you ever climbed a monopole and they put those platforms on it, a lot of times you got to figure something out. It takes a long time. You got to maybe pull up an extra couple beaners to tie it, clip off on the monopole for your safety. And the first guy up should rig a safety rope. That's what we used to do. And then you put your rope grab on it. Then you have your safety there as well. I'm just saying, you got to be smart. You can't just say, I can't do it. I mean, can you imagine if you went through life that way? You know, I can't do it. I can't get through this door. I'm done. I can't go up that tower. I'm done. Yeah, what if we thought that way? So let's go on to the next one. How and to what extent does the design or configuration of towers and equipment installed on towers affect your ability to complete the work safely? Okay, here's my opinion. It plays a major role. And why do I say that? There are times when you can't figure out how to stay tied off to get to the next level. It takes a lot of thought. It slows the job down. And what I was just saying about monopoles, you really got to put a lot of thought into how you're going to be safe. Chances are the first guy up isn't going to be the safest guy. So hopefully you send your best guy up first. And hopefully he'll attach safety points. Now, listen, it's been my experience, tower owners, not that they don't want to see anyone get hurt, but they frankly don't want to improve any of the towers. It is what it is. So what you're going to have to do is figure out how to make the towers safer. Now, here, when you put stuff on the tower, I'm going to use a monopole as an example. I used to climb a monopole here in Pennsylvania, Red Lion, Pennsylvania. They have platforms on them, right? If you ever climbed up a monopole, you have to climb up through a hole in the platform to get to the next level, okay? They have like an opening where you climb up just so you can climb through. And they usually put a ladder there. Now, when you have to stretch 5 to 6 foot to get this ladder, there's a problem because the climbing pegs on monopoles are, you know, pretty big around, you know, several feet around. I can't wrap my arms around them. I try to put a strap around it. That just takes forever. They have a safety climb on it. But then when they put the platforms on it, they had no thought to safety. You think they could have somehow figured out how to align them. And I get it. Maybe they couldn't do it because of wind, antenna placement, blah, blah, blah. But they didn't align the climbing holes to get through the platform with the climbing pegs on the monopole. And chances are when they put that on there, they used a crane. I'd be willing to put money on it. They used a crane. Probably used a crane and it was probably like, uh-oh, that's not lined up. Well, it's tight now. Leave it go. I mean, I know how those things play out. That's probably the way it is. I really think it'd be great if they could put those clips on there. There's a company that makes those clips you can tie off on. Why don't they want to put it on? Well, there's probably three reasons. One, it costs money to do it in the first place. And when I say money, I imagine they just don't go out and drill a hole and put them in. They would probably have to look at the structural and make sure it's okay. Unless it's a tower, then they could probably just loosen up an existing bolt and put it on. But even so, they want to make sure they do it right. So the money to install, the money for the engineering, and so on. Two is liability. As soon as they put these things on, there's a liability factor. If it breaks, who are you going to blame? And I think a couple of them have broken in the past. You would like to think it'd go back to the manufacturer, but then you have all the finger pointing, the lawsuit, the court cases, and one more thing that everyone will hush up about and will never know the truth. Yeah, the finger pointing back and forth. And I get it, you know. I mean, you're trying to do a good thing. Next thing you know, you have a lawsuit because someone claims that you didn't do it right. And the third is maintenance. Once you put these things on, you probably should maintain them. You hope they never rust. You hope they never have any problems. The bolts don't loosen or however it's tightened on there, you know, because it's meant to be a safety point. Safety points are taken very seriously. So I get it. And it's probably the liability issue that's a big problem. A lot of the owners would probably like to put this stuff on, but then if it breaks, and I think they have in the past, someone you can comment on that, it's a real problem. So there you go with six questions. Let me know what you think. Give me some feedback. And I just went over this real quick, and I'm happy for your feedback. You agree, disagree. You know, a lot of you guys will tell me what you think. Let me know. But I just wanted to go over these first questions so we all were on the same page here. And to make sure, if you do disagree with me or if you have ideas, don't just tell me. Put it in the RFI response. Like I said, Wireless Estimator, put that page up there so you can look at other people's responses. You can download PDFs. It's really cool. The whole idea is for you to respond. You know what I mean? This is your big chance. This is your chance to do something good for the industry. So all you guys a year from now that are whining and complaining, oh, nothing's ever done. If you completed this and OSHA does nothing, you have every right to complain. Write letters. Let me know. I'll get the word out. All I ask is that this is your time to participate. It's going to take OSHA a long time. Trust me, RFIs take a long time to go through. Been there, done that. They're very tedious. So I think OSHA is trying to do a good thing here, but you have your responsibility to weigh in. You know, you can do something or you can choose not to. And trust me, it's easy not to do it, right? It's the easy way out. And you can sit there and you can just bitch to all your workmates. Oh, well, this isn't right. This isn't fair. Blah, blah, blah. What good's that? What are they going to do? You know, you can change company policy. Maybe that'll help. Are you going to stay with that company? You think they're going to change for you? If you make a good argument, they will. So here's your chance to tell OSHA how you feel. And when I say how you feel, I mean, be professional. Tell them based on fact, based on experience, based on what you know, tell them that, what you think can be done, what you think is being done, and what you think can be done better. Let's give them some ideas. And maybe I'm weak on ideas here. Let me know. Maybe I should do more. I can always update this. All right, everyone. Be smart. Be safe. Pay attention. And remember, you're going to have to create a plan at every site. Create a plan, but don't be afraid to adapt over. Let me try that again. Adapt, improvise, and overcome. Because that, I know that's, you know, a motto, but it's really the way it is out there. There's so much to do, so much that can go wrong, but it's up to you to make sure it goes right. All right, everyone, be safe.